captured and still held the homeworld of his enemy. It was also a warning of what could happen to his people if their military faltered in their vigilance. He scraped the nail back toward himself, feeling the wood give beneath the pressure. The fact that he dared damage such an expensive item, deliberately damaged it, was a statement of his place in society. At the top of society.
"This is interesting," he concluded, having sought a neutral word.
"Yes," Iliath agreed with equal neutrality, having been warned against displaying unseemly enthusiasm in the Admiral's presence. Enthusiasm was a characteristic of children and amateurs. "That is why I persisted in my investigation."
"You were remarkably thorough,"
the Admiral observed, thinking that he would not have liked serving under such a meticulous officer. Also thinking that whatever the result of her current assignment, Iliath was an officer to watch. She had a bright future, and perhaps he should consider attaching her and her success to his command.
"The enemy was remarkably thorough in their deception."
"Based on the facts available until you brought this."
He waved toward the document glowing in the hologram above his desk.
"Rather far-fetched theory."
He did not use the word information because Iliath's report was not merely a dry list of facts. No, she had used those facts to weave together a theory, an intriguing theory, a theory that was entirely her own.
"Based on all the data we have before your investigation, my staff concluded that a rogue faction of Bosphorok destroyed the two ships we sent to the wormhole near Earth. That conclusion agrees with the official assessment of the Fleet Intelligence Division. Now you have strung together a theory that calls into question the expert analysis of everyone other than yourself."
Iliath did not give an inch under the Admiral's stare.
"They did not have access to the facts I have gathered during my investigation."
His reply was a simple, non-committal,
"Admiral, there are too many facts that do not support the initial conclusions of the Fleet Intelligence Division. The site of the battle that destroyed our two ships contained anomalies we cannot explain."
Pausing to take a breath, she risked a look at the Admiral, using not only her eyes, but also the more delicate and useful sensors embedded throughout her skin. Interestingly, he was not using measures that could have blocked her sensors. His body language was casual, even bored. Yet his heart rate was elevated, and he was exuding distinctive pheromones of excitement. The pheromones not of fear, but of a predator on the hunt. He did not think her theory was wild and useless speculation. He thought she might be on to something, and he wasn't bothering to conceal his interest.
"The Rindaloo?" he asked.
"We must believe either that our clients have leaped far beyond us in technology, or that our ancient enemy is deceiving us yet again."
"Using the Bosphorok against us?"
That was a part of her theory she did not have evidence for one way or another, and that made her uncomfortable.
"Possibly, though I doubt it. Letting another species do the work for them would be in keeping with the deceitfulness and laziness of our enemy. However, giving advanced technology to the Bosphorok would ultimately be dangerous to the Rindaloo themselves."
"The Bosphorok could turn on the Rindaloo?"
"That also."
She withheld a shrug to avoid insulting the Admiral's poor guess.
"Their greatest concern should be that in the end, we will wring this technology out of our rebellious clients, and then we would make a technological leap. I think it is more likely that all the actions we have observed, including the ghost ship, are direct actions of our enemy. The Bosphorok are not involved in any way other than victims."
"Victims," the Admiral slapped his desk. "Who cheer in the streets when they hear another one of our warships has been destroyed by the ghost ship?"
He considered the document for another moment, ignoring the junior officer.
"If it is the Rindaloo, I can understand why they would use a ghost ship to terrorize us and encourage our clients to falsely view us as weak and vulnerable."
That was what Iliath had been waiting to hear. Just an if. If the Fleet Intelligence Division was wrong. Against her was the bureaucratic inertia of the fleet. In her favor was the simple fact that no one wanted to believe the lowly, ignorant Bosphorok had surpassed their patrons in technology. People wanted another explanation, craved it.
"Their plan is working," she observed, risking a reprimand for being unpatriotic.
The Admiral issued no reprimand. The truth was neither patriotic nor unpatriotic, it simply was.
"Two questions for you, Iliath."
"Of course, Admiral."
"First, assuming the Rindaloo are behind the ghost ship attacks, what is their goal? What is the end game for them?"
She had a ready answer, having asked herself the same question. Rather than appearing too eager, she paused as if considering the matter. Then,
"It could simply be exploiting the current disruption in our coalition. The Kristang are torn apart by yet another of their silly and pointless civil wars. The Theranin overextended themselves and were punished by the Jarraptha. The Theranin and Bosphorok then stupidly began fighting each other, weakening both of them and allowing the Jarraptha to gain territory easily. Now, the Bosphorok are not only unable to support their peers, they can't defend their own territory. The Jarraptha are being very careful, waiting to see how far they can push before we respond against them directly. And then, there is this alien legion."
She glanced at the man's eyes, judging his reaction. The Ruhar-led legion was a sore subject to Maxolk's leadership. Officially, they were not concerned about such a minor and primitive force. The idea that the haughty Maxolks deigned to even notice the existence of humans was laughable. The reality was that the alien legion was a troublesome irritation that might develop into a serious problem to the Maxolks' hegemony. The timing of the legion's establishment and their recent victory at Fesnico was already a problem. If the coalition were strong, the legion would barely be noticed. But on top of all the other issues the Maxolks were dealing with, allowing the mere idea of the legion to exist might be dangerous. The success of the Verdkris might encourage others to have rebellious, traitorous ideas.
"The Legion,"
the Admiral made a high-pitched growl, his species' version of a laugh. He laughed, but Iliath noted he was not showing other signs of mirth.
"The emergence of the alien might be a coincidence, or it might be part of the enemy's plan. Admiral, the Rindaloo might not have an endgame in mind. They could simply be keeping us on the defensive. They gain much, with little risk to themselves. They know we will not hit back, unless..."
Her eyes flicked to the holographic document floating over the Admiral's desk.
"Our leadership is provided with solid evidence of the enemy's involvement. As you have seen in my report, the enemy has been very careful not to leave evidence behind. Very careful. But,"
she ventured a smile,
"not careful enough."
"If you are correct in your analysis."
"Very well. That remains to be seen.
Now, my second question. Assuming the ghost ship is under control of the Rindaloo, why did they hit our ships that were traveling to Earth? There were much softer targets available. We know the ghost ship does not take risks that can be avoided. There is also the fact that there was a significant time gap between the attack on the ships assigned to the Earth mission and the current series of attacks."
She had an answer for that also, and this time did not feel the need for a dramatic pause.
"Because, Admiral, I believe those ships posed a threat to the Rindaloo."
"A threat? Earth is in the territory of our coalition. It is a world of no importance, populated by primitives."
Or, he reminded himself, it had been populated by primitive humans. With the Kristang in control and cut off from powers that might restrain their more bloodthirsty urges, the humans on Earth might have gone extinct. Fearing rebellion by the billions of useless slaves, the Kristang could have casually committed mass genocide. That's what the Maxolks would have done in those circumstances.
"A threat, Admiral, because the wormhole to Earth was the first to shut down, to exhibit anomalies we have not seen in the history of our people. I believe that for whatever reason, The Rindaloo use that wormhole to test their technology that can disrupt the operation of Elder wormholes.
You have evidence of this? He demanded.
Yes. Another ghost ship was detected in the vicinity of other wormholes that behaved oddly. The previous ghost ship broke an Elder wormhole, she reminded him. He settled back in his chair.
If you are right, then it is good that we sent a reinforced battle group to Earth.
He did not mention that the ghost ship had recently attacked two star carriers that were laden with heavier ships than those going to Earth.
However, I am not yet convinced of your theory, he declared.
Iliath kept her cool composure.
It is radical, certainly. I can provide more.
But the Admiral's eyes suddenly glazed as he stared straight through her. He was receiving a message. As she watched, his heart rate spiked. Moments later, he wiped away the hologram.
There has been another attack by the ghost ship at Vua Vendigo, he announced. This time we have lost a heavy cruiser.
Iliath knew that was both good and bad. Bad because the hopes that the mysterious ship could not sustain further attacks were proven wrong. Good because while that ship was still operational, it was possible someone would find evidence that proved her theory correct.
They attacked a heavy cruiser? The enemy is growing bold. This could...
He waved her to silence.
The time for theories is over, Commander Iliath, he said with disappointment.
If Iliath's theory had been proven, that would make his life easier, for he would be fighting an enemy he knew rather than a ghost. He would also reap the glory of having brought her report to the senior leadership. Now all her efforts were for nothing.
Another cruiser searched the wreckage of a Bosphorak battleship.
He emphasized the ship's undeniable ownership.
Our people found paired quantum state interchangers.
Iliath felt a wave of chill.
The Bosphorak salvaged them from the wreck from one of our ships?
No.
He shook his head and stood, indicating the meeting was over.
One of the interchangers was found blank. It was not manufactured by us.
That is impossible, she gasped.
More impossible. One of the others exhibits evidence of having been reassigned more than once.
Interchangers are a single-use item, she protested, refusing to believe.
That was the whole point of the technology, that once assigned to a pairing, it could not be altered.
We thought they were. Apparently we were wrong. Iliath, we lost a heavy cruiser to an ambush by the ghost ship. The Bosphorak are reading our message traffic.
Fleet intelligence had warned that the ghost ship somehow had access to information about the flight plans of Maxulk starships. Senior leadership publicly dismissed such concerns as unfounded speculation, while privately agonizing over how many ships had been ambushed.
With the discovery of interchangers aboard a Bosphorak battleship, it is now clear that their ghost ship is not alone in having such capability. Our ancient enemy would never risk giving interchanger technology to a lesser species. Somehow our clients have advanced significantly beyond us in technical ability without the assistance of the Rindaloo. I am sorry, but it appears you were wrong.
He gestured for her to follow him out the door.
It also appears that our entire system for secure communications has been rendered useless.
Chapter 25.
Hey, Joe, Skippy interrupted my train of thought while I was writing the after-action report for our battle at Planet Voodoo. What I was thinking about, I can't remember because he interrupted it. He interrupted me all the time, and I had learned to partly ignore him. But when he stretched out words like hey and had that, well, heh-heh tone in his voice, he instantly had my full attention. What's up? I asked, steeling myself for the worst possible news. We had once again pinged to Maxolt's relay station for data. Technically, Skippy had ransacked the station's low-level AI. He took over the thing and stripped away all the data we needed. When he was done, he erased all evidence we had been there, planted false memories, and we went on our merry way. The Maxolts would never know anything unusual had happened because the station AI had no memory of anything other than a normal, boring day. My imagination was working overtime, dreaming up awful scenarios like somehow the Maxalks knew our ship was crewed by humans and... No, that wasn't possible. Was it? No matter. Speculating what could have happened was a waste of time and just made my blood pressure spike. I have a question. It's kind of a friendship question.
Friend? WTF? Had Skippy become friends with the station AI and... Speculating was a waste of time.
Sure, Skippy, go ahead.
Remember a while ago you said that sometimes a true friend has to stop you from doing stupid things?
Yeah.
You said a true friend will get Daryl to do the stupid thing so you both can laugh about it later.
Sure.
That reminds me, Joe, the next time we fill out a crew roster, we need to include a Daryl.
We do a lot of stupid stuff out here.
The Daryl doesn't need to be named Daryl, Skippy. It's more of a concept.
Ah, got it.
Is that what you wanted to talk about? If that was all he had to say, I was eager to get back to... Crap. Whatever I had been thinking about before was totally gone from my mind.
No, that was just an example. I have kind of a moral dilemma.
I thought you had a question about friendship.
Both, actually.
Why don't you tell me what this is about?
Well, that's the problem. I'm not sure I should tell you. Let's say, hypothetically, you learned some important info, something your buddy would like to know about, but you know that if you tell him, he will probably get all emotional about it and go do something dangerous and stupid.
Oh, shit. Whatever awful thing I had imagined he was about to say could not be as bad as what he was trying to say. For Skippy to be experiencing a moral dilemma, the situation had to be catastrophic.
You want to know whether you have an obligation as a friend to tell the guy?
Yes. If I know he will do something stupid, should I tell him this important info?
That's a complicated question, I answered truthfully.
It kind of depends. Let's drop the hypothetical. Does this information affect only me or the whole crew?
The whole crew. Because the stupid thing I know you will want to do will put their lives in danger. It also affects nearly 200 other people. By people, I mean humans.
At that point, I had absolutely zero idea what he could be talking about. He feared I would risk the lives of the crew for something I did not need to do, but would do anyway.
And it involved several hundred other humans?
WTF.
If only several hundred humans were affected, the issue could not involve Earth or Paradise. Again, I had no clue, so I asked him.
Okay, Skippy, this is now officially a military matter. As the commander, I need to know, so tell me.
How about if we pretend this whole conversation never happened?
That is not going to happen. Tell me right now. That's an order.
An order? To me?
He snorted.
Okay, buddy boy, if you want to pull rank on me, then I need to consider whether it is my duty to prevent the commander from jeopardizing the mission so he can run off on some idiotic feel-good side project.
Shit. It's that serious?
Hey, knucklehead, I wouldn't be so worried about telling you if I wasn't so worried about what you will do with this information. I know you, dude.
The worst thing about being a hypocrite is knowing you are a hypocrite. When I was in high school, toward the end of my senior year, I saw my buddy Steve's girlfriend kissing another guy. Did I tell him what I saw?
No.
That wasn't because I thought he would be violent. I just didn't see the point of all the drama that would result. We were graduating in 2 weeks. Steve was going down to North Carolina to work in his uncle's air conditioning business, and his girlfriend was going to college in Michigan. The odds were they would not see each other again. Plus, they had only been dating for 3 months. It wasn't like they had found true love. So I withheld the truth from Steve.
Why?
Basically because I didn't trust him not to let his bruised ego make him do something stupid and totally unnecessary. Yes, there I was, Mr. Big Hypocrite. Insisting that Skippy tell me what he knew.
Skippy, I appreciate your concern. You are right. Sometimes you have to protect a friend from himself. The problem is, I am not just a friend. I am the commander of this ship. It is my responsibility to decide whether we continue with the current mission or change our plans. I need to know.
Ah, he sighed.
Okay, don't say I didn't warn you.
I promise to tell everyone that you did warn me.
Deal. Okay. Remember how I told you that the White Wind Clan not only brought UNEF soldiers to Camp Alpha, they also kidnapped humans and brought them there? I stiffened at recalling that horrific memory. Yes, they were used for experiments to create bioweapons. Right. In case the White Wind had difficulty controlling Earth, they planned to reduce the human population to a more manageable level. He paused. I know that is a very cold and clinical way to describe a truly monstrous subject. All I am doing is stating the facts. I know all that. How does it affect us now? You destroyed the stocks of bioweapons at Earth. The White Wind Clan doesn't exist anymore, and lizards can't get to Earth anyway. Unless... An awful thought struck me. Did the crew of the Dagger have a backup plan to... Whoa! No, Joe, this has nothing to do with Earth. This will go faster if I just tell you what I know, you know? Shutting up now. Okay, the White Wind brought UNEF to Camp Alpha as a staging base because they didn't have another place to hold a large, potentially unruly and hostile military force. They hadn't yet concluded negotiations to use UNEF to garrison Paradise, and... That's all ancient history, Skippy. Why do I care? I'm getting to that part, numbskull. You know the White Wind brought kidnapped humans of a wide variety of ethnicities and ages to Camp Alpha for bioweapons research. That base was on the other side of the planet. That's why UNEF never saw it. The reason the research was conducted there was the White Wind planned to use the bioweapon if UNEF got out of control. Why? We were all gung-ho idiots back then. We thought the lizards were our glorious allies. We did think that. And you know what? I kind of miss those blissfully ignorant days when life was so much simpler and I didn't have so much responsibility. Yes, but if somehow you learned the truth, that you went off-world to fight on the wrong side of the war, things could have gone sideways in a hurry. The White Wind were operating on a shoestring budget. They couldn't afford any complications. Anyways, the reason you care is you care about the humans who were kidnapped off Earth. I gave him the side eye. I do care, but you told me all those people were killed in the research or afterward. They were. All the humans used for experiments on Camp Alpha are dead. However, the White Wind did not bring all the kidnapped humans to Camp Alpha. About 500 of them were brought to a planet called Rakash Dewelne to be used as a control group. And as reserves. Shit. You mean, yes, Joe. In the databanks of the relay station I just ransacked, I learned there are 182 humans still alive on Rakash Dewelne. Damn it. If you don't like hearing that, you really won't like knowing that 134 of those humans are under the age of 10. What? Hey, I didn't kidnap those children. Sorry. I don't want to sound callous, but... How are they still alive? The White Wind Clan is gone, right? Correct. Their assets were absorbed by the Fire Dragon Clan, who took everything they considered useful. That mostly means military assets to support the civil war we started. The Fire Dragons have pretty much left everything else alone for now, except for trading or selling assets that other clans want. No one wants Rakash Dewelne, so that planet is on the sidelines until the civil war is over. Yeah, great. That's not my question. The White Wind, or whoever is running Ruck. The name Rakaresh Dewalin was too long. I needed to think of a nickname for the place humans were being held as prisoners there, so... Let's call this place Rikers, okay? He cocked his head, puzzled. Rikers? For the Star Trek character? No, for the prison in New York. Ah, I get it. The humans being held there are prisoners of war. The lizards run in the place now. They are continuing to feed the humans there? You make it sound like you don't like that. He was surprised. I do like it, I'm just surprised, that's all. Listen, I'm trying to understand the situation. I can't imagine the lizards are feeding an isolated group of humans out of the kindness of their hateful lizard hearts. Oh, I get the question now. They are mostly not feeding them, Joe. The biosphere of Rikers is somewhat compatible with human life. The humans are mostly feeding themselves. They are growing earth crops, or they learned the hard way which plants and animals on Rikers can safely be eaten. Yeah, but aren't they a security risk? No. The humans are on two islands, far from the population centers of the planet. The entire world only has a population of less than 1 million.
The humans are surviving, then?
Sort of. Their numbers have dropped from almost 500 originally to under 200 today. The food supply has been a major problem, and obviously the Kristang have provided hardly any medical care.
This is bad. What aren't you telling me? You think their situation is not bad enough? I think you haven't told me how bad it is yet.
You know me too well.
All right. From the relay station, I learned the entire galaxy is talking about two subjects right now. The ghost ship that is making the Maxalts look like fools. He chuckled. You should see how the kitties are trying to deny the whole thing. We are driving them crazy, Joe.
I will send them a fruit basket to apologize. What is the second thing?
The Alien Legion.
The Legion? Seriously? Their action involved only a couple thousand humans on a planet nobody cared about. Even if all of UNEF Paradise signed up for the Legion, that wouldn't significantly boost the combat power of the Ruhar.
Ugh, he sighed wearily. Hey, Dum-Dum, I told you you need to read my summary of the Legion's death trap mission.
I did read it.
Apparently you don't remember the important details. Anyways, Perkins knows the importance of the Legion is not 10 or 50 or 100,000 human troops. It's the millions of Verdgris who could potentially be added to the combat power of the Ruhar. Emily Perkins has got the whole galaxy in an uproar. Everyone is frightened that the strategic math might change. Adding the Verdgris to the Ruhar strength of arms not only boosts the hamsters against their traditional enemy, the Kristang, it could have long-term effects on the balance of power across the galaxy. Traditionally, civilian populations have been relocated when control of a planet changes from one side to another, or those civilians are used as hostages to get a better deal on a world the conquerors prefer. The Verds are the largest group of aliens living under the control of a foreign power, and the only group of significant size that has renounced affiliation with the official government of their species. There are Ruhar living under control of the Kristang, but those Ruhar remain loyal to their own people, at least in spirit. The Verds, just by fighting alongside Ruhar on Fresno, have threatened to upset the social arrangements that have been in force for thousands of years. No one knows how to respond, and everyone is anxious about it.
That makes sense. I agreed. Damn it, he was right. I did need to read that report.
How does a group of human children threaten?
They don't.
Then why are you going to keep interrupting me?
As a response, I mimed zipping my lips, locking them, and throwing away the key.
Let's see how long that lasts.
He rolled his eyes. The threat to the humans on Rikers is not what they might do, but what could be done to them. After the Legion unexpectedly won the fight on Fresno, the Theranin were concerned. Then the Bosphorak were forced to pull out of their joint offensive with the Theranin because the Maxalks are beating the crap out of the Birdbrains. Now the little green pinheads have panicked. Their position is weakened. They no longer have help from the Bosphorak, and the Maxalks are demanding the Theranin push the Giraptha back, which they can't do by themselves.
He paused to see if I interrupted again. All I did was nod for him to continue.
The last thing the Theranin need now is for their Kristang clients to be thrown into even more disarray if support from the Alien Legion allows the Ruhar to stage a major offensive. From the relay station, I learned the Theranin have asked the Maxalts for permission to stage a raid on Paradise to hit the humans there.
Shit. Sorry, go on, please.
The Theranin rightly see humans as the key to the Alien Legion. Without the presence of UNEF soldiers, the Ruhar public would never agree to provide the Verdgris with weapons and training. The logic is hit Paradise hard enough, and the Alien Legion problem goes away. Fortunately for UNEF, the Maxalks are concerned about the Theranin committing warships to an operation against Paradise, because the Giraptha would certainly respond and retaliate. Silently, I gestured with one hand for him to keep telling the story, even though I had a lot of questions for him. Unfortunately, the Maxalks suggested an alternative to a military strike against Paradise.
Oh, shit, I groaned.
Sorry. I'll allow that one.
Have you guessed the bad news?
The Theranin want the Fire Dragon clan to develop a bioweapon for use against humans, and they plan to use the POWs on Rikers as test subjects?
Very good, Joe. That's close to the truth.
The Theranin don't trust the Kristang's skill in biotechnology, so they are negotiating to buy the humans. They will be transported off Rikers to a Theranin research base, and then used to develop a bioweapon. I should have been screaming with horror. Maybe I'd seen and heard about enough horror that I could put it aside until later when I would allow time for screaming and throwing chairs and whatever else I thought would uselessly blow off steam. In the meantime, I concentrated on doing my damn job and being useful. That's going to violate the rules, right? No use of bioweapons? The Kristang thought they could get away with it the last time because they planned to make it look like a natural mutation of a human virus infected the Ruhar. No way would anyone believe that a second deadly virus on the same planet is a coincidence. Well, yes and no. Yes, you are correct. No way could the Theranin get away with delivering a bioweapon. The Rindaloo would respond, even if it took them months or years to investigate and move their lazy asses. No, because the Theranin are clever, and they're getting help from their asshole patrons. The little green pinheads planned to cause a mutation of the vaccine I developed. All humans on Paradise had been vaccinated, and almost all Ruhar on that world also. Damn it, I have to ask a question. Permission granted? The vaccine has already been administered, right? It's gone. It created antibodies in the people who were treated. Then it... I waved a hand vaguely in the air. It died or something. How could the vaccine... Ugh. This is what happens when I try to dumb something down for you. Yes, numbskull, the vaccine is gone. My treatment for humans was not just some simple vaccine that generates crude antibodies. My technique used gene splicing to alter their DNA so their DNA looked for the pathogen and then cranks out a cure. What I should have said is the Theranin planned to hijack my alteration to make the DNA produce a fatal mutation. I hate to say this, but the plan is quite clever, and they probably have the ability to do it. Maybe I should have anticipated that someone might use my technology for nefarious purposes. It's too late now. If humans on Paradise begin dying, everyone will blame the miraculous vaccine that was provided by an unknown source. That vaccine was manufactured by the Ruhar and voluntarily used by humans. There won't be a violation of the rules. It's a technicality, but those are important in this war. Bottom line is the Theranin could get away with it. Shit. Shit, shit, shit! That was very helpful, Joe. Do you have any more words of wisdom? Those kidnapped children. They will be used to develop this new bioweapon? Along with the adults, yes. The Theranin want to purchase all of the prisoners. They already have a dozen keepers, but a dozen people is not a useful test population. Joe, I know you are thinking that we have to rescue the people on Paradise again, but no. Skippy, I am thinking about those children who were taken from Earth, held in horrible conditions, and are now going to be used for cruel experiments. That's what I'm thinking about. Exactly. That is what I was worried about. You hear about a group of human children in danger, and you immediately want to abandon our mission to fly off and rescue them. Crap! I really wish, that Emily Perkins had just stayed home on Paradise and not gone off on an adventure with this alien legion she invented. Damn that woman! She had to know the humans on Paradise would be seen as a threat. I mean, it's kind of a duh that aliens would want to hit back. Of course they would. Paradise is better protected than it was, but UNEF is still a soft target there. It's not so soft now, Joe. After Fresno, the Ruhar anticipated there might be retaliation against UNEF, so they added a destroyer squadron to the battlegroup stationed there. Also, the project to complete the strategic defense network in orbit has been accelerated. The problem is the Ruhar are building their defenses to fend off a Kristang attack. They can't stop the Theranin. If those little green assholes really want to wipe out UNEF. Anyway, if the Theranin can develop and deliver a bioweapon, the defenses in orbit won't matter. Right. It's not just about rescuing a small group of children. You say that, but I can see that wild look in your eyes. You biologicals lose all ability to reason and use logic when your offspring are threatened. This is not just about 130 children on one planet. The humans on Paradise have been busy making babies. There are a lot more children there than on Rikers. And, I shook a scolding finger at his avatar, it is not a bad thing to care for children. I didn't say it was a bad thing, dum-dum. My concern is that you monkeys will go flying off with a half-baked plan to rescue the children on Rikers without thinking about it first. I fear you are not capable of thinking in this situation. He was right. Maybe it was impossible to make a plan or a decision without being overwhelmed by emotion. The thought of starving children taken away from Earth and held in horrible conditions far from home, living in terror every day, was overwhelming. It was supposed to be overwhelming. The people who weren't affected by hearing that kind of horror are psychopaths, and I didn't want to be one of them. Let's make a deal, okay? If you think I am making a decision based on emotion rather than good sense, you call me out. You say that now, but if I do that, Skippy, I am capable of being calm and reasonable.
Calm and reasonable, Skippy said incredulously.
Joe, when you were 6 years old, didn't you go to a petting zoo and get into a fight with a llama?
Hey, that llama was being a dick.
Yes, his voice dripped with sarcasm.
It was all the animal's fault. Your family got banned from the petting zoo because Joe ruins everything.
Can we get back to the subject? I asked, knowing the answer to that question was no. Skippy was so convulsed with laughter, there was no way we could have a productive discussion until he got it out of his system. And for the record, that llama totally was being a dick. There was nothing to do but wait until Skippy was done laughing, so I waited.
Oh!
His avatar pretended to wipe away holographic tears.
That was a good one. You being calm and reasonable.
I promised to listen.
Really?
How about this, for example? The easiest way to end the misery of those children, minimize risk to this ship, and ensure the safety of humans on Paradise is an orbital strike on the islands where the children are being held. End the threat to Paradise by ending the humans on Rikers.
That I leaned forward across my desk, close to lunging at him. Close, but I didn't. My alter ego No Patience Man was mostly useful, but he had a bad side. I too often talked and acted without thinking. One thing that had helped me is counting to one before I react to something that made me angry. Not counting to three, I didn't need that. Counting to one was enough. Skippy was baiting me. What he said was true. If the goal was to ensure the safety of Paradise with minimal risk to our ships and crews, then an orbital strike to wipe out the poor humans on Rikers was an option I needed to consider. I didn't like it, but I did need to consider it. That was an asshole thing to say. I didn't. It was also true. You're right. An orbital strike is an option. A crappy, awful option, but it is an option. Was living with myself if I callously ended the lives of those children an option? No, it was not. I could burn that bridge when I came to it. Let's make sure that is never our best option, okay? That's up to you, Joe. You make the plans, you make the decisions. You're the commander.
Shit. Thank you so much for reminding me.
Hey, I didn't want to tell you about this at all, remember?
Yeah, all right.
Don't tell anyone else about this yet. I need to think about how we could rescue those people on Rikers.
Rescuing them isn't the only problem, Joe.
It's not? Maybe my brain wasn't working at its best right then.
No. If all we cared about was pulling the humans off Rikers, we could park Valkyrie in orbit and rain hellfire down on the lizards until they surrendered the humans to us.
But I was catching on to the problem. We can't do that without blowing our cover story for all the ghost ship attacks we just conducted.
Correct.
Also, however we rescue those people, we need another cover story to explain why anyone other than us would risk military action to pull a small group of primitive humans off that planet.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Do you have any other good news for me, or would you prefer to just drive a rusty nail through my skull?
No, I'm good. You have enough on your plate.
I had enough on my plate before this latest trouble.
Hey, in the future, could we have a code word to signal when you're about to dump a truckload of shit on my head?
Me saying, "Hey, Joe," wasn't a good enough signal.
My response was to pound my forehead on my desk. My old desk aboard the Flying Dutchman at least made my forehead cool when I was bonking it in frustration. This fancy damned Max Ulk's desk had its own climate system to keep it at the user's body temperature. I missed my old desk. I missed my old ship. I missed my old life.
Chapter 26.
People in the staff meeting had the same reaction when I told them about the POWs on Rikers, and that Skippy thought an orbital strike was an option we needed to consider. Don't be mad at Skippy. He is only stating the ugly truth. He wants us to be sure we are not risking our crew, our mission, and maybe all of humanity just to rescue one small group of children. We are not talking about doing that. Pulling those people off Rikers also protects over 100,000 human lives on Paradise. That's why we are contemplating a rescue mission. Adams scrunched up her face like she was trying hard to think of something. She was improving rapidly. The nanobots in her head were mostly deactivated and dissolved. She did not need any help walking. She was using the gym by herself without any difficulty, and she was not back to 100% yet. She still had trouble expressing complex thoughts. Not with understanding complex issues or concepts. She was reading at a high level and acing the tests Skippy gave her. Her speech center still had some rearranging to do before she was fully recovered. She knew it, we knew it, and she knew we were being extra patient with her when she spoke. "It's okay, Adams," I said softly. "Take your time."
"I hate you being patient with me."
She glowered around the table, her stutter almost gone.
"That is not going to change." I glared back at her.
"So suck it up, Gunnery Sergeant. You're here because I value your perspective. Whatever you've got to say, say it when you can. We can wait." She squinted, and her lips pressed together. Whatever she wanted to say, she was trying to squeeze it out of her head.
"That's not true, is it? We can't wait."
That remark drew surprised looks around the table.
"We can't wait forever," I replied.
"The Theranin are coming to pick up those people and..." She was frustrated again. This time, the source of her frustration was me. That was a good sign.
"Not about waiting. I meant it is not true that rescuing those people on Rikers is about saving humans on Paradise."
That got me worried that she had not been able to follow Skippy's briefing. From the people casting their eyes down at the table or looking anywhere but at Adams, I wasn't the only one concerned about her.
"The Theranin want..." "I know the Theranin are buying those people so they can develop and test a bioweapon. I..."
She balled up her fists, then released them. Her frustration then was with all of us. Her still-recovering brain had figured out something the rest of us were missing.
"Skippy, do the Theranin absolutely need the humans on Rikers? Can't they buy some keepers or create a virtual model of human biology for testing?"
"The Theranin already have a handful of keepers, and they have tried to purchase more. Keepers would be better test subjects because they are adults and more similar to the target population on Paradise," he said in a clinical tone. "The children on Rikers are not optimal test subjects, but they are available. No clan that has keepers is willing to sell or trade them. Each clan is holding their keepers in reserve in case the alien legion invades one of that clan's planets. The keepers are considered a strategic asset. There was a raid 2 months ago where one clan attempted to steal another clan's keepers. Unfortunately, all those keepers were killed in the crossfire." He paused. "Bunch of morons. I don't know whether to feel sorry for them or be grateful they are out of your gene pool."
"I feel sorry for them," Reed spoke immediately.
She looked around the table.
"By this point, they all have to know they screwed themselves. They screwed us, all of humanity, because they were stupid and stubborn and refused to see the truth."
Smythe nodded.
"I want to hate them as traitors, but they are only misguided."
"Or not," I added.
"Remember that Chisholm guy we captured? He was pretty certain the Krestang weren't the good guys. He was willing to sacrifice himself if there was any possibility that would get better treatment for people on Earth."
"Ah, shit. There's no point arguing about this now. Skippy, when you developed a vaccine or whatever to counteract the pathogen last time, you built a virtual model of human biology. Can the Theranin do that?"
"No. If you remember, despite my confidence in the model I built, we tested the vaccine on the infected keepers. Even I could not be certain my model was completely accurate. However, though the Theranin do not possess the technology to build a biological model of humans, the Maxulks do have that capability and would likely loan it to the Theranin. As I explained, the Kitties do not want their clients distracted by conducting a risky attack on Paradise. They will bend the rules in this case, because the Kitties are also somewhat concerned about the Alien Legion. So, as Margaret stated, do not fool yourselves into thinking an operation to rescue the people on Rikers is about anything else. Pulling those people off that world will not necessarily stop the Theranan bioweapon effort.
It would slow down that effort, though? Sims asked.
Denying the Theranan access to... She swallowed like she'd eaten something distasteful.
Those test subjects would make them go back to the drawing board?
It would, Skippy admitted reluctantly.
Then, Sims looked right at me. It is worth considering an op to rescue those people.
Ah, Skippy groaned. Yes, shmaybe.
I guess it is worth thinking about, developing a plan, unless that distracts us from doing something more important.
More important?
The nerves that controlled Adams's facial muscles were back to operating perfectly because she gave Skippy a look of unmistakable disgust.
Sir, her focus was back to me. You all have had loads of fun flying around blasting the enemy with our ghost ship while I was on R&R. I know that must have felt good to hit back at the enemy. Did you really accomplish anything? Colonel, you said the best we can do is play for time out here. Try to delay the day when the Maxulks turn Earth into a radioactive cinder. That's all temporary. Rescuing those people, the children, and bringing them to the beta site, that is permanent. That will change their lives forever. That is something that matters. That is worth doing.
Gunny, you're preaching to the choir. I want to launch a rescue op. I tried to assure her, because the look she was giving me was I thought I knew you, but now I am not sure. We need a plan to minimize risk to our ships and crew, and to avoid risk of exposing our secret. If we can do that...
Don't forget, Joe, Skippy scolded me. You also need to dream up some cockamamie cover story for why anyone would risk a military operation to pluck a bunch of lowly monkeys off an isolated world.
Shit. Yes, thank you, Mr. Encouragement. I glared at him. That is on my freaking list along with everything else. Smythe cut through the bullshit. Right. Assuming we will try to create a workable plan, what data do we have?
Well, Skippy sniffed. Of course, I have far more data than you would ever need about the planet.
Yes. Smythe was brusque. Adjusting to his new legs had made him more irritable than before. Do you have any data that is useful? I would like to know the disposition of enemy forces on Rikers. I suppose we won't have that until we arrive in system when...
No?
Skippy was smug, as usual. I have detailed information about the status of Krystang defenses on and around that world.
You do?
Kapoor gave Smythe the side eye, and the Star Team commander nodded. Both of them assumed Skippy was boasting. He wasn't. In fact, I do. The Theranan conducted a secret recon there 5 weeks ago, in case they can't reach an agreement with the Fire Dragon clan and needed to go down to take the humans anyway. There is a faction of Theranan leadership that is eager to pound the Fire Dragons on Rikers to make the point the Theranan should not need to bargain for anything from their loyal clients. Whatever the Krystang have should be available for use by their Theranan patrons for the greater good of their glorious coalition in the overall war effort against their nefarious enemy blah blah blah. The real reason that a faction of Theranan are itching to do a smash and grab on Rikers is to demonstrate their strength. Everyone across the galaxy views the little pinheads as weak, with good reason, because the Jarraptha have been kicking their cloned asses. Smythe and Kapoor exchanged a satisfied glance.
Status of enemy forces check, Smythe acknowledged, well pleased with the aspect of the situation.
It was Sims's turn to ask a question.
What do we know about the people? The humans, she clarified, because we had to do that now.
I know where they are, or where they were 5 weeks ago. Also, I have bios, including names, origins, health status, all that, on all the human subjects. The Theranan demanded full data as part of their pre-purchase inspection.
Pre-purchase?
Adams spat. Her stutter came back when she was agitated.
Gunny, Skippy is just stating the facts.
What do you mean by bios?
You know who these people are? Like, names?
Well, yes, of course, you ninny. He verbally slapped me in front of my team. The Kristang kept careful records of who they kidnapped. Names, locations, family, and medical histories. The lizards simply didn't snatch people at random. The subjects were selected to compromise a broad spectrum of human ethnicities and maximize genetic diversity. The goal was to replicate the overall human population with as few individuals as practical. That is also why they preferred to take entire families.
Families? Reed expressed her outrage.
Yes. By studying a genetically related family group, the Kristang could...
Even he could not be clueless forever.
Hey, I did not kidnap those people, and I don't approve of what the lizards did. If you truly want to have the best chance to help those people, you need to understand their background and the motivations of the lizards.
What I need... Adams had a painfully pinched expression on her face again, only this time it wasn't from frustration.
Is access to nukes and railguns, and anything more exotic we have aboard this bucket.
Margaret, Skippy chided her. That is not... I cut off Skippy's reply with a knife hand. That is exactly how all of us are feeling, Gunny. We can use that as motivation. Skippy understood he had overstepped.
Access to full biological information about all the surviving humans is on your tablets and laptops, he stated in an apologetic tone.
Also, all the data I have about the planet, defenses, local civilian population, and anything else you might need.
We're agreed then? I asked, looking around the table. We move forward with planning?
You're asking for a vote, sir?
Kapoor asked warily.
I'm asking for input and advice from my senior staff, I explained.
In that case... Kapoor didn't look at Smythe before he answered, which was a sign of his growing confidence.
I recommend we study the issue. It will be very difficult,
that time he did look at Smythe,
to conduct any substantial ground operation with the personnel we have aboard.
Understood. Do your best. I addressed my order to both Kapoor and Smythe. Give me options, if we need more people. I shrugged. We'll add that to the list.
After I dismissed the meeting, I endured the usual round of people wanting to talk with me individually to ask questions or express their concerns. When that was done, I walked back to my office for an individual discussion I wanted. As I sat heavily in my chair, I called out, "Hey, Skippy."
"Hey, Joe."
His avatar appeared instantly.
"What's up?"
"Why are you so against us trying, at least trying, to rescue those people?"
"Children, Joe. Rescue the children.
I do not think you would contemplate such a complicated and risky operation if only adults were involved."
"Whatever." He was pissing me off, which is what he wanted, and I fell for it. Taking a deep breath gave me time to calm down. "Maybe you're right. Why are you so against the idea?"
"It's not just this," he sighed. "Joe, you can't save everyone. Right now we can't save Earth at all. We have the most powerful warship in the galaxy. We are moving a freaking wormhole to Earth. We have a secure beta site outside the galaxy, and you want to risk all of that for the sake of less than 200 of your people. That does not make good sense, no matter how you look at it. I know you. You're the kind of person who can't go to a dog shelter because you would come home with a dozen dogs instead of just one."
Okay, he was right about that.
"I'm not trying to rescue everyone. Just the people I can."
"Same thing," he dismissed my logic. "Either way, it leads to nothing but heartache for you, Joe. You have to accept there is always a limit to what you can do. I notice you didn't dismiss the option of an orbital strike."
"I have that in my back pocket," I replied through gritted teeth. "That won't be mentioned as an option by either me or you, unless we don't have any other workable options, understood?"
"Jeez, yes, don't be mad at me, Joe."
"Sorry."
"Okay." Pulling my laptop out of a drawer, I opened it. "I will study this data you got for us.
Before you do that, I suggest you visit Margaret."
"Why?"
"Dude, I don't want to invade her privacy, but you gotta trust me on this one."
Skippy's advice about personal issues wasn't always useful, so I approached Adams's cabin carefully.
Before tapping the alarm, I straightened my uniform. Then my thumb pressed the buzzer, and I was committed.
"Adams," I said into the intercom. "Can I speak with you?"
There was a silent pause, then the door slid open. She was sitting on her couch, legs crossed in a pose I think is called the lotus position. All I know is that pose is something guys can't do. Her upper body was bent over the tablet on her lap. She looked up, wiping tears away with the back of her sleeves. She had been crying. Unsure if I was there as the commanding officer or as Joe Bishop, I opted for a neutral... "Gunny?" "Oh." She wiped her left eye angrily. Then she sat up straighter. "Sir, come in." She unfolded her legs and started to get off the couch.
"As you were, Adams."
I pressed the button to close her door behind me.
"What is it?"
"This." She was regaining her composure, turning the tablet screen to me as I sat on the couch next to her. I was sitting close, but not too close. Also not so far away that it was obvious I was being careful not to be too close, you know? Damn it, why is my life so complicated? On the tablet was the biography of a 10-year-old girl. Most of the data was about her original and current medical condition. I didn't read the details at that point. The top of the file had two photos side by side. Instantly, I understood why Adams was so upset. Why she was reading about that girl.
"That could be me."
She tapped the screen. The girl on the left was younger, looking startled but not afraid. The photo was cropped so it focused on her from the waist up. Her right hand was reaching out, and at the corner I could just see another hand and an adult's hand holding her. She was wearing a clean t-shirt and either jeans or jean shorts. With her left hand, she was clutching a smartphone, and though I couldn't tell what was on the screen was lit. Whenever the photo was taken, there was electricity available in that area. And the area was the southern United States. How did I know that? Because over her right shoulder was the blurry sign of a Krispy Kreme donut shop. Yes, it could have been other places in the world, but the odds were against that. Plus, also in the background was a man wearing the colors of the Tennessee Titans football team. The girl on the right was older, frightened, and sad. Her face had been washed, but her neck was dirty, and from the streaks of dirt remaining on her face, she hadn't used soap. She was wearing a shirt made from some sort of sack, maybe canvas. Her hair, which in the first photo was tight curls that cascaded down over her forehead, was now matted and shorter. As I could not see the lizards caring about the personal hygiene of their slaves, I assumed one of the adults had cut her hair to make it easier to manage. All of those things I noticed at a glance, including the stunted and yellowed rows of corn growing in the background behind the more current photo of the girl. None of anything I mentioned is what I really noticed right away. It was the girl's face in both photos. She could have been a young Margaret Adams. The girl in the first photo had her hair styled in a longer version of the way Adams usually wore her hair. The shade of their skin was roughly similar, as were their eyes and cheekbones. The older girl in the second photo looked startlingly like Adams, except gaunt and without any hint of joy in her eyes. Even at her worst in a coma, Margaret had not looked as sickly and generally worn down as this girl.
"It could be you."
I reached out and squeezed her shoulder, not even thinking what I was doing. I didn't need to think about it. It was a natural thing to do. She was hurting. Again, remember, Skippy explained that as her brain healed and adjusted, her emotions would be on a roller coaster. He had nanobots regulating production of hormones to protect her from a real problem, but mostly he had to let her newly revived brain and body get used to each other and find a balance. If I had a massive dose of testosterone one day and a crash the next day, I would be angry and depressed and a general pain in the ass to everyone. Margaret was handling the situation much better than I would have. She leaned into me, then jerked back on the couch. Wiping away tears, she turned to me, her eyes narrowed but pleading.
"Are you really considering not rescuing these people? You're gonna just let her die?"
I do not know much about women,
That fact has been well established. I do know one thing about women, because it applies to men, too. People rarely ever talk about only one thing. Behind their words is a whole lot of stuff they are not saying, but they are thinking it. Margaret wasn't only asking if I, as the mission commander, was considering the option of taking no action to pull the people, our people, off Rikers. She wanted to know if I was the kind of person, the kind of man, who could let that little girl die. She wanted to know what kind of man I am. She also wanted to know if we had a future, with that word in all caps, and if that future, our future, might possibly include a little girl like the one in the photos. Okay, maybe I am reading way too much into one simple question. I don't think so. Yes, guys tend to be clueless. When guys are clueless, it is in the direction of not picking up the subtext of what people are saying. Also, maybe it is way too early for Adams to be asking any questions about our future if we had one. Again, I don't think so. We still didn't know each other that well. She was not dropping down on one knee and proposing to me right there. Which, at that moment, when I saw the pain in her eyes and that she was asking me to make it go away, would have been totally okay with me. Just saying. Maybe my emotions are not completely under control either. That's life. If I was right about anything at all, she was asking if I was the kind of man she thought I was because she wanted to get to know me better. Was I the kind of man worth getting to know better, or should she drop the whole idea? That's what she was asking. We don't have a plan yet, I mumbled. The objective, I emphasized, is to pull our people out of that hellhole and bring them home. She knew the difference between an objective and a plan. The objective is what you're going to do unless you can't. In the military, we hardly ever say we can't do something. Our people. She picked up on that right away. Every human in this galaxy are our people. No one else cares about us. I tapped her tablet. That includes this girl. She looked away from me, back at the girl. Her finger traced the outline of the older girl's face.
Sir, I have never asked you for anything.
Her eyes flicked up, reading my reaction.
I want us to bring this girl home. Not just her, all of them.
If we can, I replied cautiously. I had to be cautious. If the likely cost of rescuing those people meant losing our ships or exposing the secret that humans were causing havoc around the galaxy, then I could not authorize a rescue. She knew that. If there is any way that we can, we will, I added.
I want you to make it happen.
She held her gaze, looking from one of my eyes to the other.
We do the impossible all the time out here. This has to be possible.
I promise. If it's possible, we'll do it.
It's impossible, Major Kapoor announced dourly as I dropped into my office chair and waved them to sit. He and Smythe had been waiting for me in my office.
Seriously? I groaned, on the verge of shouting at the special operator. How could you know already? It's only been... I dug for the Z-phone in my pocket to check the time.
Time isn't the issue, Smythe explained. It only took a quick overview of Skippy's summary to determine the operation is impossible.
I gave him the side eye. Had Smythe's near-death experience made him timid? No, that was never going to happen. Had it made him cautious? Too cautious? Besides, he had near-death experiences before. What about the SAS motto, "Who dares wins," I asked, knowing that would put him on the defensive. Except it didn't. He shook his head.
The SAS got that reputation by being careful to take on missions that could be completed successfully, he emphasized, implying the rescue mission on Rikers could not. There is no point to daring if you can't win. That only gets your people killed for nothing. We have barely, I began to protest. It is impossible with the personnel we have available. Colonel, he added in a softer tone.
Oh. I understood his objection. Guys, come on. Rikers has a small population. The defenses are minimal.
Skippy can take control of their strategic defense platforms in orbit and hack communications all around the planet. The two islands where the prisoners are being kept are isolated. There isn't any security there. We should be able to fly in, pull the prisoners out, and fly away without the lizards even knowing we were there.
That would be true, Smythe conceded, if we were not the Merry Band of Pirates.
Colonel, Kapoor added, the operation will be easy, as you said, if nothing goes wrong.
Shit, I groaned.
Okay, yeah, we need a reserve.
There is also the time factor, Smythe warned. Skippy believes the Theranin will arrive to pick up the humans in 6 or 7 weeks, whether they reach an agreement with the Kristang or not.
I personally hope to be combat ready at that time. He frowned. It was rare for him to acknowledge any weakness.
Adams might be recovered enough to back up the team on point. That still leaves us desperately short-handed.
What about the personnel we pulled off Avalon? I asked hopefully.
They both shook their heads. Kapoor answered, as he had been directly working with the new people, while Smythe still focused on bringing himself up to the proper level of fitness.
It is my understanding that all of the pilots are making good progress on transitioning to either dropships, the Flying Dutchman, or Valkyrie.
Yes, I agreed. Reed is working everyone to exhaustion, including herself. She is confident that she can find a match to everyone's skill set.
That is good, Kapoor nodded. Unfortunately, none of the new people are likely to meet the standards for a star team.
Seriously?
I tilted my head at him.
Kapoor and Smythe were rightfully proud of their very special operators. They also needed to be flexible.
Colonel, Smythe lifted a single eyebrow in a what-did-you-expect gesture. The new people are mechanics, communications specialists, logistics officers.
Sims was a logistics officer, and now she's my XO, I noted.
Lieutenant Colonel Sims is a fine officer. Smythe wasn't giving an inch. She is an excellent executive officer. She is also not qualified for a star team.
Okay, I see your point. None of the new people?
Kapoor answered my question. 3 or 4 of them might serve in a support role if we had more time. Colonel Bishop, this is not only a matter of individual fitness or skill. We need to bring people up to speed. He used an American expression for my benefit. Then the team needs to train together. There simply is not time to bring a new person into a cohesive team. Even so, we would be dropping into combat with less than 12 people. That is not enough to do the job, sir.
I do not like hearing this. I sat back in my chair.
Kapoor was about to respond when Smythe lifted a hand, just enough to indicate the other man should wait.
But, I said, I have to trust your judgment. If it can't be done, it can't be done.
Huh.
Sir?
Smythe lifted an eyebrow again.
Smythe, I have sometimes accused you of having a love of doing crazy shit. Usually that scares me. This time it works to your advantage. If you say it's impossible, it really must be.
Thank you, sir.
I think.
He was trying to decide if I had praised or insulted him, or both.
Okay. A rescue is impossible with the personnel we have.
Yes, Kapoor agreed, with the pained expression of a person having to listen to some jerk repeating what had already been said.
Then clearly we need more people.
Chapter 27
Hey, Joe. Skippy appeared moments after Smythe and Kapoor left my office. I have a question for you. Unless your question is which of your fabulous ideas for fixing our problem is the best idea, I really don't want to hear it.
Which problem is this exactly?
Or should I pick one at random? There's a big list.
The latest problem.
Sometimes he could be annoyingly clueless.
Don't pretend you weren't listening. We need to find another star team somewhere out there, or more qualified people to build a bigger team.
That is ridiculous. Unless when you say out there, you include alternate universes where we still have access to Earth.
No, I wasn't.
Wait, could we do that?
Holy shit.
My mind was reeling with the possibilities. That could solve all our problems. Unless the alternate universes were all shitty compared to this one.
No!
He laughed.
Dude, what is wrong with you? Reality doesn't work that way. Technically, you can go to an alternate universe, but the difference from this one would be so slight you wouldn't notice it. Before you ask me a whole lot of stupid questions that won't lead to anything useful, I have to warn you. If you think other physics stuff I have tried to explain give you a headache, prepare for your brain to explode if you want to discuss the multiverse. I'll pass on that.
A good idea.
Smartest thing you've said in a month. The second thing won't work either.
Second thing?
Ugh, you call me absent-minded. The second thing you mentioned, about finding qualified people to build a star team. Didn't you listen to Kapoor? Even if you could snap your fingers and magically bring a group of special operators on board, we don't have time to develop them as a team. And they would need to learn our equipment, tactics, the...
Okay, yes, I did hear him tell me that. Geez, Skippy, I was only bitching about my problems. I wasn't expecting a solution.
Ah, so since you can't solve your own problems, you decided to make my life even more miserable by dumping on me?
Sorry. He didn't reply. I said I am sorry. What was your question?
Maybe now I don't want to talk with you.
He pouted. Is your question something that is going to make my life even more miserable?
Probably.
Good point. I will totally ask my question. So, here it is. Dude, are you crazy, or high, or just mind-bogglingly stupid?
What?
Why, for the love of God, did you promise Margaret that you would rescue that girl?
I didn't actually promise to do that. What I said was we would do it if it is possible.
Dude.
What?
Seriously?
What? I demanded.
You heard yourself say, if it is possible. Is that what you think she heard?
Shit.
Exactly. Damn, you are a moron. She told you to make it happen. Do you think there was an implied if in there?
No.
Crap. She expects you to make it happen.
Well, hey, I didn't know my star team was going to take a giant dump on my head by telling me it is impossible.
Maybe you should have asked first. I'm just saying, you know?
I know.
Now, unless you can do what is clearly impossible, you will forever be a failure to her.
Come on, Skippy. Adams is a Marine. She knows some things just can't happen.
Sure, some things just can't happen unless Joe Bishop is involved. You are the guy who had the idea to move a freaking Elder wormhole.
Crap, I did.
You used a jump wormhole as a weapon.
Yeah.
You captured a senior species battlecruiser using Legos and a bagel slicer.
Burying my face in my hands, I groaned.
I'm doomed.
Ya think?
Thank you for being so supportive.
I am?
He was mystified and disappointed.
Ugh. What I wanted was to watch you wallow in misery.
How about we schedule that for tomorrow?
I am suspicious.
What can I do? How can I fix this with Mar...
Maybe it wasn't a good idea to use her first name when we were not in private.
With her.
At this point, there is only one thing you can do, Joe.
What's that?
Duh. Make it happen.
The next day, after breakfast, after hitting the gym for a workout I wasn't into, I was in my office doing nothing useful. Unless you count sitting with my elbow on the desk propping my head up as useful. Skippy appeared on my oversized desk looking cheery.
Hey, what you doing, huh?
Wallowing in my misery.
Oh?
He asked. We scheduled that for today, remember?
Oh, I thought you were joking.
It's not like I have anything else to do.
You could finish reading my summary about the Mavericks' mission on Fresno. They did something impossible, too. They escaped from a death trap and turned certain defeat into victory.
I suppose.
Unless you're too busy. I can see you are swamped with work.
He laid on the sarcasm really thick.
Okay. I pulled my laptop out of a drawer. I'll read the damn thing. Good. Also, in case you are not miserable enough already, Margaret asked me to reinstate some of the nanobots in her neural network. With the laptop in one hand hovering over the desk, I froze. Why would she do that? Because she is not satisfied with her scores on the rifle range. I didn't know. She drew a rifle from the armory yesterday afternoon and spent 3 hours on the range. Plus, she has asked Captain Frey to help her with the new powered armor suit I constructed for Margaret. Why is she... Ah, shit. She wants to be ready to participate in the rescue mission, even if she is restricted to a backup or support role. She is so determined to, as she told me, do everything she can to assure the rescue is successful that she is willing to have creepy alien robots crawling around in her brain. You know what she is like when she is determined to do something. I am. Hey, on a totally unrelated subject, where are you planning that rescue operation? Oh, shut up. I waved the laptop through his avatar. Since I had nothing else to do, unless you count hating myself, I continued reading Skippy's summary of the Alien Legion's death trap mission. Part of it was an exciting account of the mission that Skippy had assembled from data he pulled from Ruhar, Kristang, and Jarap the databases. That part I put aside to read later. What I read first were reports written by Emily Perkins. Why? Because I was curious about her. When I was stationed on Paradise, we had only met a dozen or so times, and those were all business. Really, I didn't know her well at all. After I was promoted to Colonel, we only met a few times, and those were brief exchanges of pleasantries before a meeting at UNFHQ. What I did know was that she had accomplished a whole lot, and done it without the help of a magical beer can. When she and her team were stealthily racing around Paradise, reactivating long-forgotten maser cannons, she had known she was being manipulated by an unknown group, and that whatever the objectives of the unknown group were, the health and welfare of the human population were not high on the list. She had known she was being used, and before we launched the operation, I had to fend off objections from Chang, Smythe, and others who feared she would balk at taking orders from a mysterious benefactor. Worse, she might bring the information to the Ruhar authorities in the hope that her demonstrated loyalty would be rewarded with better treatment of the humans on that world. I had dismissed those concerns, based on what little I knew of Emily Perkins. Like I said, I didn't know her well, but one thing I knew was that she had an independent streak a mile wide and a distrust of authority figures. Those were maybe not desirable attributes in a typical military officer, but every organization needs mavericks. My own problem with authority had worked out well for me. Mostly. Anyway, back then I had been sure Perkins was too smart to go running to the Ruhar with info about the maser cannons. At that time, the hamsters were planning, even eager, to trade Paradise to the lizards. Knowing about the hidden maser cannons would not change the fate of humans there, because the Ruhar federal government was not going to risk screwing up the negotiations by firing those cannons. The local planetary government might have been tempted to use the maser cannons, but there was no way such a large bureaucracy could keep the operation secret from the federal government. So, Perkins figured their mysterious benefactor was a group of local Ruhar who rightfully did not trust their government to do the right thing, or to do it completely. If she was being used, she could use them right back for the benefit of humans. So she did. When I first met Perkins in the tiny hamster village of Teskor while I was there with my fire team, I decided right away that she was good people. Intel types typically could not be trusted, and I didn't say that I trusted her back then. I just knew that if I somehow got screwed by UNEF, it wouldn't be her idea. Yes, she got me yanked out of Teskor and sent to the cargo launcher complex, which felt like a reprimand at the time. Later, I realized she was looking out for me when she moved me away from the center of attention. Anyway, it worked out okay for both of us. You know how when you're surfing social media, you keep scrolling down, even when you know there are much better things you should